Devices Radio Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back from the dead, Beyond Driven Radio, at least for this episode. I am your host, David Johnston. With me today is my client and good friend, Scott Cohn. Scott, how you doing?
Doing all right. How about you?
Doing pretty good on this sunny day up here in normally dreary Rhode Island. So for listeners, Scott is a huge, huge bodybuilding fan. And for a really long time, he's been interested in trying to get into some variation of either podcasting, working with clients. In my experience, one of the brightest kids I've ever met, when it comes to supplementation in general, and just, really knowing the science of bodybuilding. So Scott reached out to me and said, hey, I want to set something up. He's buddies with a lot of pros and had been speaking recently with Victor Martinez. And, I've worked with Victor myself a couple times in the past, helping with his autism fundraisers, helping a little bit with organizing the Baltimore Pro Show that he won in 2016. So I was more than happy to see if Vic would do it. And luckily enough, Vic was in. So joining us today, IFBB Pro and highly decorated, Mr. Victor Martinez. Victor, how you doing?
Good, good. How you guys doing?
I'm doing great, man. Long time no talk.
Yeah, what's up to all the listeners out there?
All right, so a lot of time when we do interviews like this, Vic, we kind of ease into it. How did you get started? Tell us about the sand weight set that you had when you were a kid, all that stuff. I think bodybuilding podcast has been on long enough. Everyone knows we all kind of did the same thing. So I'm just going to jump in with something a little tougher. I think it'd be more fun for listeners. Everyone, myself, I was closely following the 07 Olympia. I was a huge Ronnie fan, wanted to see if he'd come back and get the title back and all that jazz. So, at the 2007 Olympia, you ended up getting second behind Jay Cutler. And it was, I don't want to say universally agreed upon, but there was a lot of consensus that you were kind of overlooked. I won't say screwed, but a lot of people said screwed. What I was going to ask is, the next year you were a favorite going into it and you had a pretty severe injury. What were you bitter about that after it happened? How did you deal with going through that rehab and having the long road to come back? I mean, being just about the top bodybuilder in the world, it's got to be one of the most challenging things ever.
Yeah, it's just more annoying than anything. But overlooked at 07 is an understatement because I was actually overlooked in 2006, big time,
Okay. What was your placing in 06?
It was third. And it was a frivolous third because, again, I should either been, second or fighting with Jay for that first. But, when they start playing their top guys, that you can't really deviate
right
the Olympia LLC sure. from doing anything else. That's what they do, and that's why this year is great that it got turned around and made it actually more interesting, by right. Sean Roden winning. But 07 was definitely overlooked, and it was just one of those. Everything was a perfect storm getting ready, my diet, my training, everything, and little did I know I was in for a big, fuckery.
did you go into that evening with the confidence that you could actually win it?
Yeah, I actually did. I mean, everything kind of spoke for it. When people say, hey, you don't look like you want to win this show because I'm not smiling, it's kind of bullshit, because I don't think Dorian Yates ever smiled for any of his shows, and he will right. win left and right, And sure. just to name one big champion, but smiling on stage does not indicate confidence. Confidence is basically how you look. You bring in your package. That's what, kind of indicates, I'm here to win. So sure. when I was there, I had, of course, the confidence, and I even added the smile, of course. And to top it off, the icing on the cake was the posing routine. So everything was kind of aligned for me. It was just one of those things that you don't expect, but I still remember when Ronnie Coleman said congratulations backstage before the awards. And I said, oh, man, Ron, why'd you say that? I don't have it on my hands yet.
Yeah.
And I already kind of, I never celebrate before having anything. And it has to do the way I grew up, right. Celebrate too soon. Something's down to happen or it goes the other way. And I didn't think it would happen, all that saying of paying your dues.
Right.
You know, I thought it was real, but it's not really. And my mistake was not to play into, you know, I was always hiding. I was always hiding and training and, of course, some partying, but that was different, you know.
Sure.
But I never put my two senses into speaking about negative about anyone, you know, or judging panels or anything of that sort. Because if you don't say nothing, they can't really say anything against you.
Right.
So I always didn't connect very much with the judges. I just say, you know what, my main thing is I'm going to do my work. I'm going to show my work, and that will ultimately give me the rewards. And I was wrong. I was wrong only because I should have played the field a little bit better. I should have, I guess, spoken and have a better connection, you know, personally, because I think that's what ultimately did me in, you know. And everybody saw it. You know?
Well, it's interesting to hear you say that you believed going into the show in 06 that you could win the Olympia, because by that time, I mean, I was at the Olympia in 05 and 06, and it had kind of become, you know, a cliche that Ronnie's unbeatable. Nobody can beat Ronnie. You know, we're all just fighting for second, third. And then sure enough, you know, Jay finally took him out. And in 08, you know, because of the injury, you weren't able to do the Olympia. And sure enough, Dex walks in. I don't think a lot of people had him on the radar to take Jay out.
I know Dex celebrated that. Dexter, I've heard you celebrated that, Dexter. It's out, all right?
He still is celebrating it.
I have three people confirm that Dexter was happy I got injured, man. But it's all right, man.
Okay. All right. I got you. All right. So let me take that then. You know, you were talking about how you learned to not celebrate something until you have, you know, the victory in your hands based on how you grew up. You know, and that's one of the major things. You've been through a lot. You know, the fans, I think, really respect you more than a lot of the top pros. I won't say more, but you're one of the most respected pros because you don't go out there and bitch and moan when bad stuff happens. But, you know, we see you go through some struggles. What initially got you into bodybuilding and what hooked you about it? What I really kind of want to hear about, you know, your time in the Dominican Republic, how was it different than when you got to the States? And did that have any impact on your introduction to the sport?
No, I actually don't. I remember very little of the Dominican Republic because I did get here at the tender age of 5,
okay,
almost turning 6. So I don't remember much other than chasing some chickens, eating some platanos, and delivering milk with my sister's father. And very vague memory. And so I can't really say I remember much of Dominican Republic, but what did get me into weightlifting here was all the trouble I would get into when I was a kid. I was never one to back down on an argument, on a confrontation, on anything like that. You know, I'm not much of a verbal person, so when somebody had something to say verbally, I would handle it physically because arguing would last too long.
What age are we talking? I mean, we're talking your teens or before that?
More like 7 years old.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, 7 years old because I didn't speak the language. So, you know, I was still kind of learning it. And I would mispronounce stuff. And then you had, you know, I grew up in the melting pot, New York City. And people always test you, you know. They'll test you by bullying you. But regardless of my size, I never saw myself as a skinny kid, you know. I always had more heart than anything else. So I would just tell somebody, you know, you have a problem with me, let's just fight. And this went on. That's how I met most of my friends, actually. And it went on up until, you know, 16. And my mother just kept getting annoyed because I was always getting, you know, kicked out of school or something. And that's when she gave me $50 for my birthday, I remember. It was 89. And the first thing I thought was, man, should I buy some Jordans? I always wanted, but, you know, never afford them. The only thing I thought of was, you know what? I'm going to go down to Model's and buy myself a weight set. Like, let's do something different. And that's basically what turned it all around. But this was before I thought of buying the weight set. I remember being in Dominican Republic that summer. And my friends took me to the gym. Dominican Republic because I was, again, I was fighting everybody in the neighborhood over there because I had the freedom to actually come to this country, and they thought I was kind of a show off, which I wasn't, you know, that was through their eyes. Right. And my friend saw me fighting constantly. He said the same thing. He's like, come on, let's go to the gym. And that's basically when I got hooked. My friends were wrestlers over there. And after working out over there for about maybe 3 weeks, came back, and my mother gave me that $50. That's when I said, you know what? Let me buy some weights. Let me continue this because this is cool. It's fun. I saw what you can look like. If it was real, because I still didn't believe Arnold Schwarzenegger or Lee Haney or at the time, actually, Lou Ferrigno was real. I didn't think that was real. So I said, let me just try this and do it. And it was more mentally, you know, sounding than physically. Like, I didn't do it just for muscle. But after a while, I realized this actually gave me a lot of peace just working out.
And it was your therapy, so to speak.
Yeah, it was a therapy. So muscle was, of course, the obvious, more direct, you know, result of it. But it was much deeper than just lifting weights to build muscle for me.
Sure, and spiritual in a sense.
Yeah.
How long after that did you join a gym? And then how long after that did you start competing?
I didn't join a gym soon after again, because at that time over here in New York City area, they were pretty strict on 18 and over, and Bally's was, I think, the biggest gym in the business, and New York Health and Racket, like real expensive gyms at the time. And then I saw my friend Caprice Murray. I'm sure you guys know him.
A mutant
pro. Yeah, IFBB pro, and you know, retired. Last show he did was
Men's Physique
show. Yeah, Men's Physique show. And Caprice was, I think he was born big, you know, because I never saw him small. And Caprice is cool. He actually helped, you know, gave me a hand in a couple of fights. Caprice could fight everybody. Don't underestimate. So he actually helped me out, and I said, yo, Caprice, man, I'm trying to get to a gym, because I used to just collect weights in the neighborhood from everybody who wasn't working out, and I would build my own weight set aside from the one I already bought, the 110-pound weeder set. So he said, why don't you come to Elmo's? I said, well, the 18 and over. He goes, Elmo has no rules, man. You know, just come to Elmo's. Went there. It was about, I think for the year, it was like $120, not much, but I didn't have the money. So in order for me to join, I sold this gold bracelet I had. And that's the first time I actually joined the gym for a full year. And once I joined, I considered doing the Elmo Santiago show. And that was my first show. Elmo Santiago, local, non-sanctioned, no NPC, nobody. It was no organization, nothing. It was just the local show that he did for his gym.
Given that was in New York City back in the day, can you remember any other dudes that did that show that went on also to have bigger names in the sport?
Man. Yeah, Caprice Murray. You had Ronnie St. Cloud.
Okay, yeah.
You had Martin Martinez.
Okay.
You know, as far as I could remember, they actually went pro, those guys. You know?
That's awesome, man.
So let me
ask you this. When you were, you know, you said you were in the Dominican until you were about five. And, you know, during that era, you were chasing chickens around and delivering milk, kind of like, you know, Rocky did. So it's not surprising, that you ended up developing more heart. But with that, you know, you said that your buddies back there, when you went back to visit, were wrestlers. The question then is, when you came back to the States, why bodybuilding and not wrestling? And it kind of relates to, go ahead and just touch on that.
No, but you're wrong. I love wrestling. We were wrestling on the concrete floor all over Washington Heights, you know. And I was one of the ones defending that wrestling is real, you know. The athleticism of wrestling is real, you know. Okay, you can argue a punch here and there, whatever, but at the end of the day, you cannot jump and do a backflip from the top.
Well, so to be clear, you're not talking Greco-Roman wrestling. You're talking
I was professional wrestling. Yeah, okay. Hulk Hogan. Come on. These guys were basically fighting in the Dominican Republic. They were wrestling with the champion of my time when I was growing up in the Dominican Republic. It was Jack Veneno.
Okay.
You know, Jack Veneno, was the biggest guy he fought was Ric Flair, and you know, he was the man because he beat Ric Flair, quote unquote. You know, he was pretty big. So coming back here, now Hulk Hogan at the time, it was big. So we would do a lot of theatrics on the street, and people would actually be around us, and they would actually watch us play wrestle because we were so good at creating these characters, you know.
Sure.
And you know, he wanted to be big. You wanted to be Davey Boy Smith, British Bulldogs. Sure. You wanted to be, you know, Randy Macho Man, you know. And at the time growing up, who was Ultimate Warrior, the most shredded, probably best looking, you know, wrestler at the time.
Right.
You know, and this is what we wanted to do. But then again, being from Washington Heights, being in the hood, where the hell will you wrestle? They didn't have a wrestling school in New York City.
Right.
So it wasn't real attainable. It wasn't real to us.
Well, so with that, you know, it's interesting to me because, you know, different countries, different cultures have what they're more influenced by, less influenced by. And the only reason I ask that is the first time I visited the Dominican, which was, I want to say, 2010, 2011. When I did go out in the streets and whatnot and was approached by locals, I was asked repeatedly if I was a fighter or a boxer. Now, of course, yeah. I'm a pretty fat bodybuilder, so that's probably why, because I don't tend to look like a bodybuilder. But it's interesting to hear that muscular influence has been there, you know, for a long, long time. Now, this year, earlier in the year, you and fellow pro and best friend John Del Rosa co-promoted the first IFBB Pro-Am in the Dominican. What was it like promoting and organizing a show on that scale? And what did you find to be the major challenges? I was wondering if you thought it was going to be a lot harder than doing a show in the States, because you have your show in Jersey as well in August, I believe.
The Bronx.
What were the differences as you saw it?
Everything was different. You know, everything's different because the Dominicans are a different kind of people. You know, going back to get the support, it's like pulling out teeth. Okay. So it's you gotta remember, we you know, the best designer from the Dominican Republic was Oscar de la Renta. You know, he's one of the main guys as to why Punta Cana is so famous, you know, and he was a trendsetter. So Dominicans,
what's he design?
A clothing designer.
Okay.
Yeah, he was one of the best of his time. And you know, Dominicans are not really so much as trendsetters, you know. They follow what's hot, and if it's not, they don't. And that was a challenge for us, because here we are coming with a freshly new show. Now, that first time, a new organization, now we're stepping ground into another organization that's been there for years, you know, 30, 40 years before us. And these are people I guess posed for. I did their shows, but, you know, my loyalty is, you know, the Pro League USA.
Right.
This is, you know, so bringing that show, it was a lot of obstacles, being blocked, you know, not being welcomed, you know, not being wanted at all. And so we have to, you know, it's not just social media posting. We have to actually now take a trip there. I think me and John went there for about 4 trips. Just to do seminars and tell the athletes, you know, we're really not just doing this for the sake of money, but we want you guys to experience what we have, you know, in the life of bodybuilding, you know, travel the world, compete, and, you know, make a career out of it. It was, you know, harder than what I thought, you know, so it wasn't easy.
Would you say in general, I mean, like, we're all fans of bodybuilding and we've all competed, everybody on the call right now. By the way, for listeners, I forgot to introduce when I started out, Mr. Scott McNally, who pretty much run all of Advices Radio right now. And I'm very thankful he's here helping us out today. But he competes as well.
That's all right, Dave. I forgive you. I'm just hanging out in the background in this call, and I'm just having such a good time because Victor's been a guy that I've looked up to for a long time. So I'm going to sit quietly and just enjoy.
Wow. Yeah.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you. But please chime in whenever you want.
All right. Thanks, Vic.
So with that, with the Dominican, Vic, you know, we're all fans of bodybuilding. We know bodybuilding isn't, you know, pro football. It's not something that person on the street is that familiar with. But yes. Would you say that you're a local celebrity? Like, when you got there, were you able to use your image or clout at all to help push your shows a lot more easily? Or do you find it didn't do much for you?
I thought it would be that way. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Now, you asked me a question about the U.S. I won't say much. You know, I'm only a visitor here.
Okay.
But you asked me about my country. I'm going to tell you everything. You know,
and I got
they
you.
Get pissed. They get pissed regardless. So it's cool. You know, the love was kind of, you know, kind of almost there, but not really. Of course, I have a lot of friends. The people that actually go to the gym, the people that actually work out, the people that follow me, that's different. But remember, it's only a handful. You go to bodybuilding, even in this country, it's not as big as it could be.
Right.
You know, it's you go to Brazil, you get I got a huge following there. You go anywhere in the Middle East, is huge. India, you name it. Dominican Republic, they're just a little bit more, you know, remember the main sport in Dominican Republic is baseball.
Right.
You know, if you play baseball, even if you're in the triple A's, they'll know you. They'll know you because they want to follow a sport that really gives good money.
Right.
You know, forget the effort that you put in. Forget that you're a champion in that sport. I mean, we have a number of boxers, a number of wrestlers, a number of, you know, athletes. It's just the support that the Dominican people have is lacking.
Right.
Is lacking a lot.
So there's other sports that already allow for upward mobility specifically in the Dominican. And because of that, it's a little similar to the States in that regard, meaning you get into bodybuilding only because it's your passion, not because you see it as it's going to get me rich. Okay, that makes sense.
Exactly, but it's cool, again, because the reason I did this is because I did it for those handful of people.
Right.
You know, I want them to know that, yes, you can do something with this. I want them to know that it's possible. And regardless if they're only going to have, you know, whatever, 1,000 followers from 15 million people, it's cool, you know,
right.
Because those are the ones that are going to, you know, give you another 1,000. And those are the ones that are going to follow you throughout your career, which I've had, you know, again, from the time I started to the time now, these are the same people that have been following and supporting me in my country. You know, it's going to take a while before you get that strong fan base, you know, I mean, but it's just the culture. It's just the way it is. You know, Dominicans are very machismo. They kind of, you know, some people will support you, but a lot of people will always just hate, you know, the first thing they say is when you have muscle is like, oh, you got a small penis, you know? And I'm like, that's your best defense, you know?
Yeah.
You know, oh, shit, you know, oh, muscles, you can't do this, you can't do that. I mean, they always find frivolous, you know, arguments as to why you work out because they want to make themselves feel better because they don't work out. And now, you know, that was back when I first started going. Fast forward now, there's probably at least 20 more gyms from the first time I went there 10 years ago. And it's a different world. So now everybody's doing it. But I go back, they still look at me like I'm a stranger sometimes.
Well, bodybuilders have kind of become strangers in gyms these days. I mean, it's not that uncommon even in the States. So,
yeah.
So let me
I keep it real. You know, some people invite me to the gym. And when I realize it's a Planet Fitness, I say, I can't go in that gym. What is wrong with you? And they're like, why do they insult? I'm like, no, the insult is them. You know, if I step into a Planet Fitness, it's for me not to even, you know, have any sort of respect for myself, you know. So it's not, you know, it's like any company says anything anti-gay, you'll boycott them. And that's, I boycott Planet Fitness because of that, because of their, you know, negative, you know, tones towards bodybuilder. And it's just me. I do that as an individual. I'm not going to be doing a big giant rally over it, but that's what I believe in, and that's what I'm going to stick with, you know?
Well, people forget that, you know, supposedly the American way is vote with your dollar. You know, if you don't like it, don't support it. So I think that's a great approach. So, Vic, who were your top bodybuilding inspirations when you got really into it? Who do you really wish you could have stood on stage with and competed against?
Oh, man, I don't know if I wish I could stand on stage because they'll wax my ass.
Right, give us
definitely a handful. Definitely there's a few guys, you know. I mean, Lee Haney I looked up to because it was probably the first televised Mr. Olympia I saw in 91. Lee Haney, Dorian Yates. I mean, watching these guys, just the look on their face. I mean, their physiques, were great, but just the look, the stare that he had was like, damn, it was just powerful, and you could see the hard work in their eyes. Lee Haney, Dorian Yates, he had, I like Mike Matarazzo, you know, just because his charisma, his energy, you know. Charles Clermont, again, I would never see him speak because I only read it in magazines. I only see his pictures. There was no social media. You had Danny Padilla that I saw a few old magazines. And of course, when I found an old magazine in my basement, I saw Sergio Oliva, and it was just like, this guy's unreal. And he's Cuban? What? It started making it more real that I can't do this. You know, when I see these guys, especially the Latinos, you know, competing, it was big. Who else? I like actually Mike Francois. You know, again, sure. It was his conditioning and just his build.
His density
was great. Yeah. And always wanted to compete with Flex Wheeler. Unfortunately, didn't get the chance, but he was one of the ones I wanted to step on stage with. And I think Sean Ray as well, you know, but, you know, that was before my time, before I stepped on stage. And I still got to share the stage, I think, once with Dennis James, you know.
What, his last Olympia, probably?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. With Dennis James, there's just so many. I mean, I can think of, you had Paul Dillette. I mean, these are guys that you'll go to the gym, you'll start working out, you see pictures of them on the wall, and whenever you did that body part, you always look to these guys to stay motivated for every set you did.
Right.
You know, and last, not least, was Kevin LeBron. You know, Kevin LeBron was beast because he was one of the strongest at the time. And, you know, his shape was just ridiculous, you know, right. Which I didn't think he should have come back because he had nothing to prove. But that was just my opinion, you know.
I understand. But I will say, when he took that shirt off at the press conference, there was one second where he went, holy crap, right? This dude did it. Yeah, I think we all did.
No. I mean, he always had that, you know, the only guy I know that can grow into a show.
Right.
So we've heard a lot about the West Coast scene as it relates to pro bodybuilding. You know, Chris Cormier almost getting in fights with Mike Tyson, Flex rolling around in Ferraris. The East Coast scene has its own scene as well. Over the years, can you give us some insight on a good New York party scene? Was Kamali getting drama every week?
Oh, man. Me and Kamali, I think if I could remember most of it, I would tell you it wasn't a good party.
All right, so I need at least one specific. What's the silliest thing you ever saw, let's say, Kamali do at a club? Not that this all needs to be about Kamali, but we all know that.
At a club?
Dude, yeah, Kamali, we know that. We know that dude's got stuff.
The only thing he did was probably put on his coat. He goes, I'm leaving. And this is about maybe 3 in the morning. And he said, I'm leaving. And he was there with his woman at the time. And he put on his coat. And I'm chilling there with Rob Lopez. And next thing you know, that was 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. At 4:30, we saw King Kamali run in front of us, run across with his coat on. And Rob Lopez said, wait a minute, was that King Kamali? Say, yeah, and I don't think so. He said he was leaving about an hour ago. And he comes back with his coat on, and he was still in the club trying to look for water. And he seemed a little confused. And
he couldn't find his way out, is what you're telling me.
No, I don't think he wanted to find his way out.
It's a good thing he didn't find his way to the tranny corner. He might have gone to the tranny corner.
He knows I always looked out for him, you know. He gets a little hazy after a few drinks, you know, and some partying. Gets a little hazy, but no. I look out for my friends, man.
Who parties harder, East Coast or West Coast for bodybuilding?
Oh, man. Who parties harder? I think the West Coast party is harder, but the East Coast can hang longer.
Okay. Well, it's because it's Eastern time, man. We're used to staying up late.
Yeah. I think we could definitely hang longer, you know. And, West Coast might have, you know, a good 10 hours. East Coast could have about 72 hours, man.
That's awesome, man.
3 days.
Well, part of that, too, is because the West Coast, you get tired, you go outside, and it's nice and beautiful weather out. East Coast, you got to stay in that club, freezing, man.
Oh, man. I don't think you feel the cold after a while.
So, Vic, you entered the pro ranks during what I would say was like a shift in the culture and tides, in the sense that, you know, a couple years into Ronnie's reign, and what, looking back now, in hindsight, kind of appears to be the peak age of the mass monsters, unless we have a second age of them. But, you know, to talk about some dirt, this was kind of the before Pandora's box was wide open when it comes to like synthol, insulin, megadoses,
yes,
all shared over social media and stuff. And you were kind of forced to enter the game blind in the sense that, like, we didn't have the internet and we didn't have everybody telling everybody everybody's details or speculating, yes, everybody's details. So knowing what you know now, having been in the game a long time, you know, just somebody looking to get started, you know, and they're out there reading all this, what I'm going to say is a lot of it's bullshit, most of it's bullshit. What real world advice are you going to give to that person? Not necessarily politically correct advice, but what are you going to do to steer them? You know, just a couple points.
No, definitely supplement accordingly. You know, don't try to use everything in the kitchen sink, you know, train harder and stop relying so much on supplementation. You know, build a stronger base as natural as you can, and therefore you'll create more quality muscle and be in the game way longer. You know, always one thing Steve Weinberger used to tell me is the first one, you know, that poses is the first one that's out. You know, it's just like the same thing. You know, you get up there, the bigger you are, sooner you are out of the game, you know, because you build too fast, you know, it's just going to be unhealthy. You know, how healthy can you put on 20 pounds of muscle in 2 years? You know, it's really not that healthy. So I say definitely take your time, you know, don't neglect training hard. There's no other way. There's no other way. And unfortunately, that's what people tend to look for. It's just that shortcut. Even now, you know, you have so much information on how to supplement right, how to train right, and these people still don't even know how to do a deadlift, you know, and it's right before their eyes. I mean, they're doing deadlifts and it looks like just a stiff leg deadlift, and I'm waiting for a back to snap,
right?
You know, and again, they just don't know. That's why I think the transition of, you know, bodybuilding went to classic and physique, because you can do it just hard enough to look good enough to step on a stage. You
right. know,
bodybuilding is just way too hard for most people. And to keep doing it, to keep going on that grind, to keep pushing that hard, it's a lot of work, man. And it could be sometimes, you know, you become a basket case just trying to figure out, you know, your next workout, your next supplementation, your next meal, what to take out, what to add, the amounts of food you got to ingest. And it's annoying. And that's why I get it. That's why I get that bodybuilding has become a little bit smaller and the other ones have just grown way past it,
right?
Because of that, because it attracts more of your everyday person that just wants to have one foot in life and one foot in the gym. You know, bodybuilding keeps both feet in the gym.
Well, and I mean, I don't want to contest what you're saying or put words in your mouth, but when you say, like, for anyone that's listening who happens to compete in classic physique, men's physique, or, you know, female divisions, bikini, you know, the idea gets thrown around a lot that bodybuilding is harder. Like, bottom line, if you're lifting hard, you're lifting hard. If you're eating strict, you're eating strict. I think with bodybuilding, it just takes a lot longer. It's a patient, like, you just got to rinse. So you need to just repeat and have patience. And we just live in an era where that's really been done away with because of all the other technology available to us. So, you know, with that, like, how do we get that message across in your mind, given that if you're a coach, you have a vested interest in promising faster results? If you're a promoter, you know, it's hard to tell people the goal is to get there efficiently and rapidly.
I mean that this is the thing I like about it is that if you want to, you know, be on that stage, it's great because you don't have to wait to be that big bodybuilder. I remember guys saying, I'm going to wait for till I get to an X amount of pounds. Now you can actually get in shape going as a physique guy. And based on your genetics, you're putting on good muscle. You can upgrade it to a classic. And you're still putting on more muscle, so you can be in the game much sooner than later.
Right.
You know.
Do you think people are doing it? Sorry. Do Do you think people are doing it for the wrong reasons? Meaning they want to get those stage pictures so they can post on Instagram and put hashtag online coach and tag supplement companies and become an ambassador where they're just, you know, buying their own products, have their own discount code, but they're not getting paid anything from it. Do you think want to be an athlete?
Yeah, that's another thing, you know. Again, people becoming frauds, and it's happening a lot. You know, everybody's becoming a guru. Everybody just wants to train everybody, and at the same time, who's paying for it is the athletes, because right, they're not, you know, getting taught by anybody who even has the experience or even has good experience, and that's what's happening. You know, I mean, even supplementing some athletes, I see them in the gym. They haven't even done a show, and they say, "Hey, how do I get sponsored?" I'm like, "Man, I wasn't even thinking about sponsorship until actually I was a pro." You know, well, even then, I make sure I went out and did the work to go out and get a sponsor. You know, I didn't just expect them to give me a call or just look at my pictures, look how pretty I looked. You know,
are you still with MHP, Vic?
Yeah, still with MHP.
So I think you've been with MHP longer than I've ever seen any athlete sponsored by any company. So given that you're touching on sponsorship, and a lot of people do happen to be interested in this, why don't you touch on how you've been able to maintain that relationship? You've had arguably the most successful sponsorship. What did you do that was unique that allowed you to maintain that?
Yes, I got offered money, of course, being with MHP a couple of years. I got offered a lot of money, different companies trying to steer me away. But I knew Gerard personally, the owner.
Okay.
And I didn't want money to be the factor for me to just leave a company. I like the fact that he always backed me up. And as you said before, you saw how much, you know, problems I had and issues were happening. And he was there. He didn't give up on me, you know.
So, well, he ended up bringing the rest of the family in, too, with John Del Rosa and Marco Rivera.
Yeah, John, you know, all these guys. But it's just I felt like I had no reason to leave or even entertain another offer, even if it was more money, because I just liked the fact that it was just real. I was dealing with a company that had, you know, interest in me as a person, not just the athlete. You know, and always make sure that I was okay. Are you sure? And don't worry, you know, especially when I was in 8 months, you know, locked up. And, you know, they were always, don't worry, you're going to come back, you're going to compete, and you're going to come back strong. And I did that. And that's why I always apply myself, because if you're going to stand behind me, I want to make sure I did my job and come back and compete stronger.
Well, that's a really interesting answer, because first of all, I don't think I would hear it from a lot of people, but it sounds like MHP really had a certain amount of loyalty to you because you had a certain amount of loyalty to them. And like, that's not something that we hear a lot these days, not only in bodybuilding, anything, pro athlete, like, oh, you only got a certain amount of years, you know, to maximize what you can get. So he should go out and do him and do whatever's best for him and his family. And I think that, like, in the last 20 years, you know, I've talked about this on other shows, or I've been talking about this since Geared Up days, but we're seeing, like, a really big shift in cultural values, you know, in this country, but worldwide, where, you know, it's not necessarily about taking your time and being an artisan or whatever you want to call it, and slowly perfecting your craft to put out the best product while maximizing your dollar, but rather it's about, you know, you got to take care of yourself and do you. And it sounds like you're a little more old school. You know, I'm definitely more old school, where you have a hard time just kind of going by that as your standard.
Yeah, and I always, you know, MHP has always backed me up. But, of course, I always planned, you know, life after bodybuilding. You know, I had a gym before. I had a restaurant. And it didn't work out. But, you know, it's I'm still grinding.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, I jumped into the 2019 Arnold Classic, you know, after promoting shows this year, I said, let me jump in and see if I could definitely wake up the beast again, right, you know?
Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that's perfect, because I got two more for you, two more questions I want to ask you. And the first one might sound slightly negative, but by no means is it, because last one I really want you to talk on.
It's all good.
Cool, man. Well, so with that, you know, we're talking a little bit about a shift in cultural values and stuff like that. I think, you know, this year watching the Olympia, I personally felt this way. I don't know if Scott McNally, Scott Cohn did as well, but I felt like I was kind of, you know, watching the winding down of an era that a lot of the heroes we grew up watching were at their last dance. You know, it's Flex Lewis's final 212. It's Jose's last year. Might be Heath winding down his reign. We're not sure yet. You know, a lot of the dudes, pretty much at this point, the whole Olympia lineup, none of them are the people that I started watching. You know what I mean? When I started following sport. So you're going into, I believe, your 18th year as a pro. You've been competing a long time, man, with a very decorated career.
Oh, 19th almost, yeah.
19.
Oh, too long, man. Jeez.
Well, and by no means am I trying to retire your ass early, Victor.
But you know what? I want to be able to play with my kids, and you know I have a lot of them. I want to be able to play with them and just kind of be, you know, be fully physically functional.
Sure.
After, and at the end of the day, you know, yeah, I don't have the physique I had a while ago. It's different now, and I'm bringing a different kind of look, you know, but I don't want to, you know, not be able to enjoy life because I push too hard or too much. And I'm a realist when it comes to this, you know. I'm a realist, and injuries are real, and they do happen, and I don't want to be the one that try to, you know, push too hard, and next thing you know, boom, I'm out, and now I can't even enjoy your everyday life because of it.
Right. Well, and so with that, I mean, does it scare you at all? Like, I know that there's a lot of positivity to look forward to with family and making sure that you're going to live a nice, long, healthy life. But is there a a simultaneous fear of you know, that first morning after, or maybe 6 months after the first morning after when you get the itch? Like what it's gonna be like? This has been huge.
Boring. It's gonna be boring.
It'll be boring.
It'll be boring. But again, you know, am I gonna stop competing this year? You know, maybe not. Next year, the following, who knows? I mean, right. I'm doing it healthier than what I did before. You know, and I'm not gonna bring in, you know, the crazy mass or try to be blown out. You know, but yes, it'll be boring to kind of stop. But then I'm still sticking to the industry by, you know, organizing these shows. And that's why I wanted to promote shows. So right. I could still have that insight in up and coming athletes. You know, if I could pull out new up and coming athletes from the Dominican Republic is great. You know, I mean, so far, a couple of people that won my show in the Bronx, legend shows, are pro now. You know, so it's kind of great, you know, to still be in the industry and find you're not competing, but in a way you're still contributing to it. So my contributions, I think, are more important to me to continue on in the sport than anything else, you know.
Sure.
And that's going to be more self-gratifying for me and give, you know, that troubled kid, hopefully, you know, some hope that
when you're done,
do something else.
When you're done, are you done? No chance of you're not doing the Lebroni Flex Wheeler, or you're not going to comment. Never say never.
Nah, never say never, man. I'm not one to say never, you know.
Cool.
Because I'll be bullshitting you if I did, you know. Oh, never, 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 you know. And then I'll be on stage, you know, 5 years from now, and you'll be saying, look at this fool, man.
I have a question.
Yeah, go.
What do you plan on doing business-wise after you compete? Because obviously, you know, a supplement company like MHP probably won't be paying you 10 years into retirement. Do you want to promote 10 shows a year? Do you want to create your own businesses? Like, what do you, I don't know if you have any thoughts of what you want to do.
Maybe not 10 shows, you know. I'd rather have, you know, 5 or 4 good quality shows.
Yeah.
You know, very good competitive shows. You know, and with the shows, hopefully do a little bit more charities, you know, for the underprivileged or autism, you know. Two of my sons have autism, so it's just doing stuff like that. I mean, I could I'm looking at probably opening up another gym again, you know. Definitely not in the restaurant business, but if I do, it'll be a Dominican restaurant. But definitely going into business, that's what I'll do, you know, to finance myself and my kids, you know. But it's never going to stop, you know. And and start working with some new up and coming athletes. But that's another thing that I want to do, work with these athletes and good athletes, not just the moonlighters, not the ones that, you know, want to do that one show so they can have that picture so they can get the followers, you know. And usually when you meet them, you'll know who the athlete is, you know, and those are the ones I really want to help out and support, you know.
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of an arc because you were younger looking up to these guys and they were inspiring you. And then you spent the last 18, 19 years being one of those guys, inspiring others. And now you sound like you're going to come off the back end again, looking to those guys, having walked in their shoes, but doing what you can to help facilitate them being a part of it. And I mean, that's pretty cool, man. That's, we'll title this episode "A Life in Bodybuilding," because
you know, you gotta show you have to have a way to show your gratitude. It's not just, you know, thank you and keep moving and thank you. You know, the problem is that I've seen with a lot of pros in the past, it's they're big at one point, you know, they're large, they're in charge, but that's how the only way they identify. You know, at the moment, take away the muscle and you'll see confusion as to they lose their identity. Yeah. You know, they're only identified by being big and muscular, but it's got to have something deeper and much more profound than having all this muscle, you know, and you got to do something to inspire, and giving back is the way I see it. And it's what, you know, will fulfill, you know, the happiness as to you, why I did this for so long.
Right. You know? Well, I really love that answer, Vic. I mean, I think it's really genuine and really unique. You know, having love for the game, so to speak. I said a few minutes ago that, you know, you're kind of old school with what matters to you. And I think I am too. And I think bodybuilding used to be that. Like, the expectation was there isn't money really in the sport. You don't do it to try to like advance in life per se. You do it because you're passionate and it makes you a disciplined, I don't want to say a better person as in better than someone else, but it makes you better than you were, you know, because it gives you something to strive towards.
Way better. And, you know, as people say, you know, it is a selfish sport, but at the end of the day, it could be, you could be very giving and contradict the selfishness that you did to get ready for the show, you know?
Sure.
So giving back, you know, go back to the old days, you know, have a full workout, 1-2 hours, whatever, 3 hours. And at the end of it, have a group of guys just surround each other and just pose in the mirror.
Right.
You know, that's the scene I want to create. And, you know, stay tuned.
Well, building the family. You know, you built the family in New York with John and Marco and the guys that you surrounded yourself with. And
John's in Florida now.
How is he? Whatever, man. But you got your years in. But you get the point. And I think that's awesome. Of course.
I know.
So I'm going to give you a minute. I want you to plug all your social media and anything else that you're working on and you got coming up. But one last one for you. You already let the cat out of the bag, or anyone that hasn't seen it yet, they will by the time this is released, that you're going to be doing the Arnold Classic in 2019. So, like, we're really excited, man. You know, see you getting up there again, but up there at a big show, too, you know. Tell us what your plan of attack is, how you're going to go in and win the Arnold this year, and let, you know, serve notice to everybody that you're still in the game.
Condition. Coming, you know, as full as I can, and, you know, and pose my ass off, man.
You gonna do something special with the posing routine, given that they judge that, or?
Yeah, always. You have to, especially when, you know, Arnold's watching, you know. You have to bring it on. Yeah, and give somebody good entertainment up there, you know.
I hear you, man. I'm not sure if I'm going yet this year or not, but I would definitely like to see you up there one more time. So, Vic, I really appreciate your time today, especially knowing that you're in prep and I can hear your kids in the background. So I know it's probably not easy to balance it all. Why don't you take a minute, let all the listeners know how they can get a hold of you with, you know, social media and anything else that you want to plug. I know that you were doing the autism fundraiser for several years. If you want to talk about just that for a couple minutes.
Yeah, guys, you can follow me at IFBB Vic Martinez, Instagram, IFBB. Actually, IFBB Victor Martinez on Instagram, IFBB Vic Martinez in Twitter. And soon I'll be launching my training. So I'm going to select a few athletes, not just everybody. I'm actually choose the athlete that I will work with. That's coming on the next couple of weeks. I'll be doing, stay tuned for the Polar Bear Club at turn of the year. I want to do that for charity. New Year, first of New Year. It's going to be something different. It's crazy, but you know what? That's the whole point. You know, I'm going to start the New Year's unselfish, raise some funds for cancer and autism. My mother passed away of cancer. And please, when you guys see that, donate, man. Support the cause. And again, you know, see you at Legends in the Bronx. There'll be another Legends Part 2 in Dominican Republic coming this May. And stay tuned for 2019, you know, competing schedule.
Very cool, Vic. Well,
I got to thank, hold on, I got to thank my sponsor always, MHP, you know, my trainer, Victor Munoz, my good friends, you know, Abdullah, Oxygen, Beth Francis, everybody always, you know, back me up, the Super Gym, everybody, and everybody at Gold's and Charles Glass, everybody, all the old school guys, always stay inspiring and guys still motivate me.
Very cool. I didn't mean to step on the outro there.
No, it's all good.
But Scott McNally, again, thank you so much for facilitating this for all of us.
Oh man, thank you for thanks for putting all this together. This has been a real treat just to kind of sit in the background and just listen to you guys talk. Victor, I have followed you since you had turned pro. I remember back in the days when you were pushing Jay. I've seen your ups. I've seen your downs. I am super pumped I'll be there. I will be at the Arnold, man. I'll be in the audience and I'm going to be cheering for you. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today on the Advices Radio Network. This has been really cool.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. And do this again, all right? Maybe after the Arnold.
And actually, I want to thank my friend Scott Cohen for being the one who did more of the legwork getting the setup. You got a couple questions in, so congrats. You're no longer a podcast virgin. But thank you again to Victor. You know, I've had the opportunity to work a little bit with Victor over the years, helping with his autism fundraiser. And, you know, I can personally say, I'm not going to pretend I have all this clout where I know all the pros, but having hung out, worked with a handful of the guys over the years, Victor, you've always been the most legitimate, upfront, you know, you, Jose Raymond, there's a handful of guys that, you know, I'd actually go out and get a beer with.
So, I want to say let's do that again.
Hey, man, absolutely. You know what? I'll win the Arnold, and I'll take you out for drinks after. How's that?
Nice.
Oh, twist my arm.
But seriously, thanks again for all that you've given to the sport and for coming on the show and talking with us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, guys.
All right. Everybody out there, this has been another edition of Beyond Driven Radio. Next one might be 5 years from now or 5 days from now, because that's our recording schedule. Thank you all for listening. Peace out.
Peace.
Advices Radio Network.